If you'd like to listen to our podcasts without ads, please consider becoming a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, enhanced show notes for select shows, and more. For this week only, get 50% off the first year or the first month of membership. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and use code ECLIPSE to receive the discount. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code ECLIPSE. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Now that the House has passed Ukraine aid, which President Biden signed on Wednesday, the anger among MAGA personalities directed at Mike Johnson has gotten louder and more vicious. Figures from Donald Trump Jr. to Tucker Carlson have depicted the House Speaker as a traitor to the cause and worse. Yet this isn't just garden variety right-wing ranting. There's a darker undercurrent to it that demands our attention. It reveals a movement on the right with very specific expectations of what Donald Trump would do to our NATO alliances if he wins back the White House. Today we're discussing this with A.B. Stoddard, a columnist for The Bulwark who has a new piece digging into these dynamics. A.B. rightly insists that we should take the long-term intentions of this movement very seriously. Welcome, A.B.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
So here's a rundown of what some MAGA personalities are saying. Tucker Carlson says Mike Johnson is susceptible to evil. Steve Bannon says Johnson must be deposed. Don Jr. attacks House GOP leaders moving Ukraine aid forward as losers. Representative Matt Gaetz privately threatened to oust Johnson, and Marjorie Taylor Greene is supposedly still considering holding a vote to vacate the speakership. So let's start here. Where are we on this threat to oust Johnson? Is it petering out? Where do you see it going?
Right, Greg, I think his job is safe for the next 6 months, the remainder of this Congress, because Donald Trump has been educated by his advisors not to send tweets dumping on Johnson when he can't pass a rule, and has reminded him another speaker contest would be a disaster. It would be an open-ended debacle for the party and a gift to the Democrats and Joe Biden. It absolutely would. So he's gone quiet. He doesn't like this vote. This is against his policy priorities. But he has hunkered down and defended Johnson several times in recent days because he doesn't want him to get deposed by Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene and some other nihilists. So I think his job is safe, but I think it's over. And that's because this is a very volatile conference. And I think that in the next, you know, in January, whether they're the minority or the majority, and when you speak to House Republicans, they will tell you they think they're going to be in the minority. I think there will be, you know, a very turbulent reshuffling of the leadership. So if enough of them even got it to the House floor, I think the Democrats step in and save him anyway, right? So I think he has his job. But that has nothing to do with the import of what he did and politically, this giant defiance, act of defiance, and how it's going to ripple through in an election year and be the subject of fundraisers and energizing. We know how MAGA works. This will not be forgotten. And I think there will be real retribution for Johnson and the people who came out and were quite outspoken about the need for this.
It seems oddly shrewd on Trump's part and oddly self-disciplined on his part to hold his tweet fingers about Johnson, right? As you point out, a big leadership fight right now hurts his presidential chances and hurts the Republicans' chances of holding the House, which I think are in trouble as you do. But still, the point I think you're making that's critical here is that Trump is acting out of self-interest in kind of looking the other way while this Ukraine aid got through. Does that seem fair?
Absolutely. You're exactly right. Just with abortion, he moved towards the pro-life fight in order to get elected and be in power. Now that he has given them the overturning of Roe v. Wade, he's pulling back in pragmatism for his own political preservation and saying, nope, we don't want a national ban. We want exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother. And that's what he's doing with Johnson. He doesn't believe any of it. He doesn't, you know, Johnson's comments were a real apostasy. I mean, to talk about, you know, the importance of NATO and the importance of countering Putin's march on Europe. But Trump sees very clearly what this kind of an explosion in the House would mean politically.
Absolutely. And by the way, it's worth noting that a lot of Republicans ended up voting for Ukraine aid. And as you point out, some of them are even denouncing the opposing MAGA faction as being under Russian influence. I don't think this is just rhetoric. It seems to me they really are alarmed about what's happened to a swath of their party. By they, I mean the big committee chairs who are kind of lining up to call out Marjorie Taylor Greene and Massey and others as under Russian influence and susceptible to Russian propaganda. How deep do you think this MAGA, pro-Putin, anti-Ukraine faction runs? It's not massive, but at the same time, more Republicans voted against Ukraine aid than for it in the House. So that faction is pretty significant, right?
So 105 House Republicans vote for it and 112 vote against it. It's really hard for Republicans now to defend this effort to arm and defend and support Ukraine, because people are saying, look, we understand, like, they got invaded and it's terrible, but when are we going to take care of everything at home? And so even if they're not in the Marjorie Taylor Greene zone, where they're literally pretending that Ukrainians are killing Christians and all this crazy talk, right? More voters are turning against this and just saying, America first. We have to clean up our own messes. So it's increasingly more difficult for Republicans to speak out in defense of this and to convince their voters who've been turned away from our leadership in the world and investing in that. And so you and I remember the before times when we would say, huh, you know, look at that Ron Paul and Rand Paul, his son, like fighting about your, you know, foreign aid. This is a whole different ballgame, right? It's literally the crippling of NATO. It's a reordering of the world, you know, system that has protected us and helped us thrive, that Americans sort of think is all around us, and we won't lose it if we sort of just retreat. And so it's so important, and it's so frightening, the abyss that we sort of crept over to, which ended on Saturday or yesterday or whatever, but it's real. You know, this isolationism is so real in the Republican Party.
I want to pick up on what you're saying there about it, this being an actual foreign policy vision on the part of some of the MAGA Republicans, right? You wrote that MAGA was triggered in part because Mike Johnson described Vladimir Putin as part of an axis of evil, saying Putin would continue marching through Europe if he is not stopped. That's what Johnson said. It's that reading of Putin's larger ambitions that gets them so angry. It's that that Mike Johnson told the truth about Putin's larger ambitions, right? I think this really shows how absurd it is to label these MAGA Republicans just America firsters, right? As if right. All they worry about is spending American blood and treasure abroad. It's not that, right? It's that they tacitly don't care if Putin erases Ukraine at best, or actively want Putin to succeed at worst. Don't you think? I mean, this is a real vision we're talking about. It's not just America firstism. It's a vision for the world.
I believe that it's Donald Trump's vision, and whether he is in some way beholden to Putin in a dangerous, compromised fashion, I tend to believe he is, because, you know, his sons bragged in 2007 that they didn't have to deal with American banks. They got all their money from Russians. And, you know, I think that there's a record, you know, put together by Robert Mueller, that there was abundant collusion that may have not, you know, risen to the level of the legal definition of conspiracy. But let's say he's not. Why does he, on every policy position, give Putin a break, give him an out, favor his priorities, plan for Ukraine, the war to be resolved in 24 hours, because he's going to just give territory of the Ukrainians to Putin. And in Trump's view, it's part of his pathology. He just thinks that a couple of tough guys are going to run the world, and that if he's respectful to Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, they're not going to mess with him and us. And it'll all be great because they're going to get along and they're going to do their thing and we're going to do ours. And it's going to be great. And I truly believe that people who support Donald Trump believe that as well.
Right. It's like, hey, you got your territory, I got my territory. We'll take care of the Mexicans, you take care of the Ukrainians. Right. I mean, I don't think it's an accident that the MAGA worldview also seems to envision war with Mexico over what's going on at the border. Seriously. I mean, it's a turning away from any kind of obligation to any kind of international rules. Right. We take care of our part of the world, you take care of your part. Does that seem unfair? Does that seem right?
No, I agree with you. It's just, we're going to give the Mexicans their due. We're going to dominate this dispute with our neighbor and over the border, and we're going to win and bring them to heel. We're not going to have negotiations about systems and new processes and rules. And that's why you heard the words leak out from people's mouths, territorial dispute. Didn't Ron DeSantis say that at one point?
Yes.
This is the line. It's like, oh my gosh, these Europeans, you know, it's gone on for centuries. Everyone has to just understand it's complicated. And that's the crux. And I really hope, Greg, that these Republicans who went out on a limb to actually not only support Ukraine aid, but what openly talked about this misinformation campaign and their fear about Putin's plans, I hope they will make the case again, but I doubt they will, in the remainder of the campaign about the importance of NATO, which Donald Trump wants to get out of.
That cues up what I want to ask you about next, and it's a really interesting question. Will the Republicans who did the right thing here push back when Donald Trump undermines NATO and threatens to abandon it? I don't think they will. And so an essential nuance, I think, your piece added to this whole discussion is that even if Trump's position was ambiguous on this aid package, for the reasons you mentioned, he recognized that a speaker fight would be not in his interests, his long-term intentions towards our alliances are not in doubt, and neither is MAGA's long-term international vision. So if Trump wins the presidency, and this is where all this gets a lot more dark and dangerous, if Trump wins the White House and Putin invades a NATO country, what would Trump do? And what would the MAGA movement demand? Is it reasonable to understand what we saw in this Ukraine aid fight as a signal to that effect?
I believe Donald Trump has no intent of keeping our commitment in NATO. And if Putin invaded Poland or the Baltics, that would be, he would say, you know what, we talked, he's going to figure this out in a couple of weeks, and it's not our problem, and we have to understand, and he would not send American men and women over to keep our promise and to protect this alliance. That's my view. And I think that's what his supporters want. And that's why someone like Marco Rubio is so disgusting, because he also voted against the package in the Senate, because Marco Rubio knows better. And last fall put legislation forward that was bipartisan, that would prevent a U.S. president from withdrawing from NATO. And there would have to be 2/3 vote of agreement or something, it would make it a high threshold for congressional approval, because he sees what's coming. And then he goes on Jake Tapper, you know, a couple months ago, and says, I have no problems. When Trump says he'll tell the Russians to do whatever they want, you know, I know what he did. I saw what he did in the first term. It's going to be fine. And he knows that it's not, which is why he proposed that legislation. And Marco Rubio is a believer in NATO. But he still believes that he is in a, you know, some kind of career in the Republican Party that's not worth trashing to speak the truth. So that's what's so frustrating, is that we know that Mitch McConnell will talk about the threat to NATO probably by the end of the year, even though he's endorsed the nominee. But I don't know that a lot of them will. And that's why we really need people like John Kelly, who had to convince Trump to keep peacekeeping troops in South Korea. So we need people to be very vocal about this, to explain to the American people that this goes away, you can't get it back. And I think it's just very easy on the right to think America first, my town's broke, I'm angry, and not understand the role that this plays in our peace and prosperity.
There's a lot there. I mean, it really gets at what's so dark and dangerous about the MAGA anger at Mike Johnson. This isn't just them being angry about a fight that they lost, that they're going to move on from, right? It isn't just them signaling to their base or fundraising or clickbaiting or whatever you want to call it. It's a signal about how they will expect a Trump presidency to proceed in the world with regard to NATO, right?
Absolutely. They do not prefer this world order, and they speak to each other about a foreign war deep state that is always, always trying to involve itself and spend our taxpayer dollars and hurt and kill our men and women in foreign entanglements that are unnecessary and dangerous. And that's the appeal. And it's very powerful. The isolation is string, and it's really the problem, right, is to watch something like the last week unfold and know that there are people who so deeply understand the danger. You know, even Newt Gingrich said something about this, which I was stunned by, that he believed that that's Putin's intent to rule through Europe. You know, when's Newt Gingrich said that in the last year and a half? So there's a feeling that their own voters have been so radicalized against this rules-based order, don't appreciate the safety and security it provides us, don't understand the need for American leadership in the world. But I don't know if we're going to hear from them more than this one week of the year.
Well, that is a really, really crucial point, as is the one you brought up earlier about whether Republicans will push back if and when Trump talks about abandoning NATO or says whatever he says about it. We had a lot of Republicans do the right thing on Ukraine aid here, and that's genuinely admirable and all that. And Mike Johnson did the right thing after 6 months. Who knows how much damage that long wait did, but he got there, right? We have to be glad that happened. And yet, if Trump wins the presidency, isn't it plausible that the forces in the party that are pro-NATO and not pro-Putin might be substantially weakened even further? And then what?
Absolutely. I can't envision a scenario where there is a pushback. If Trump is in a second term, firing 54,000 civil servants, making them political appointees, pre-pardoning everyone so that every unconstitutional and illegal order can be carried out, turning the White House into a kleptocracy again so he and his family can make money with foreign governments, doing whatever he wants. You think at that point, after all the death threats and the recriminations that brave Republicans have endured before a Trump second term, would have any courage left? I can't imagine it. I think that's when the curtains come down. I mean, you do it now or that's it. My colleague Jonathan Last always says the price for opposing Trump only gets higher. The time to do it was a while ago, right? The idea of a Trump second term, John Cornyn's going to stand up and say, this is really dangerous. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Yeah, it's really interesting the connection you draw there with the plans to empty out the deep state and stock it with Trump loyalists and so forth. I want to point out, by the way, I wrote a piece about this, and I want to bring it up with you because you really got at this point so well. One other thing that Mike Johnson said that I think infuriated MAGA is he went out of his way to say, I believe what the intelligence services are saying about Putin's intentions. Now, That line is important because what it says is, when Marjorie Taylor Greene tells you the warmongering deep state is lying about Russia's imperial ambitions in order to create a fake justification for endless war, she's lying, right? And so I think your point is fascinating, that the emptying out of the bureaucracy, like the State Department, and the restocking of it with people who are MAGA through and through or whatever they envision, that's essential to the broader plan you're talking about, right? Those things would go together.
Exactly. And that you're so right to point that out, Craig. The most audacious thing he did was not just to say, I trust that Putin is going to do this, and the threat is so real, not only to Europe and our NATO allies, but to us. But to go out and say, for the second time in 2 weeks, I trust the intelligence. His support for FISA reauthorization, he literally said, the members need to go and inform themselves. I went to the SCIF, and I know this is a priority. This is foiled many plots, and he defied them on that a week before and basically said people are not informing themselves and that he trusted the intelligence he was receiving. So in MAGA, that's like the worst thing you can do. I mean, Tucker is obsessed with, you know, how there's a deep state and the intelligence agencies make up everything and they're compromising everyone. And MAGA loves that stuff. So, and Trump, you know, loathes the intelligence community, threw them under the bus in Helsinki with Putin. But yeah, that is part of it, that it's, there's going to be, he is going to so vastly centralize power and his people are asking for it. The idea that some sad former yesteryear Republican stands up next year and says, wait, we have to fight for NATO. It's too late at that point, I think.
Well, I think you really captured the much deeper dangers lurking behind this MAGA fury at Mike Johnson. A.B. Stoddard, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, please make sure to check out some new content up at TNR.com. Andre Pagliarini on Elon Musk's new meddling in Brazil's democracy, and Adam Latz on Ron DeSantis's unconstitutional new law allowing religious chaplains to counsel public school students. We'll see you all tomorrow. You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.